Welcome to episode 124 of Speaking of Mysteries. I'm Nancy Clare, and today's podcast guest is Sheena Kamal, whose debut novel, The Lost Ones, was published in late July. One of the plot devices frequently found in crime fiction is that of the past catching up. And though it is a frequent story element, its variations are infinite. Sheena's protagonist, Nora Watts, a private investigator who specializes in finding people, has done her best to erase the memory of the daughter, the result of a brutal rape, she gave up for adoption. And the baby is not all Nora gave up. She also turned her back on a singing career after her attack. But Nora's past cannot stay in the past. Her child's adoptive parents seek her out to help find their daughter when she disappears. Here's Sheena Kamal to talk about The Lost Ones. Welcome back to Speaking of Mysteries. This is Nancy Clare, and our guest for this podcast is Sheena Kamal, whose debut novel, The Lost Ones, was published in late July. Welcome, Sheena.
Hi, Nancy. Thank you for having me.
I want to jump right in because you have one of the more unique protagonists I've ever met, and I always consider them meeting. I always consider myself having met these people when I read about them. Nora Watts is very unexpected, and according to the essay that I received along with the book, she sprang into your imagination with a single line, and that line was, "I know a little something about the blues." And I was hoping you could expand on that a little bit.
Well, it's funny because I don't know anything about the blues. So when that line came about, Nora really came to me fully formed, and she was a real person to me. I mean, I know she's fictional, and I'm aware that there are lines there, but I understood her, and just a little bit about me. I used to be an actor, and that was a really interesting time in my life, and I have this sort of soft spot for artists and musicians and actors and people who try to make it in that world. And so when I had this idea that she was a singer and with the line about the blues, you know, I really felt her as a character in my mind, and so she became less abstract to me. She was real. She felt real. And it sounds kooky, of course, because, you know, how can this fictional character in your imagination seem real to you? But she was, and it sort of consumed me, this idea of this person who gave up singing many years ago, but still had that sensibility about her, and that appreciation, especially for the blues, because the blues is such an emotive musical form. And so to sing the blues, to even love the blues, that takes a specific kind of personality. And so you understand more about her when you understand that she loves the blues and she used to sing the blues.
Well, first of all, I should tell you that you, considering Nora Watts a being and someone who exists, even if it is a creation in your mind, doesn't sound strange to me at all. And I think, and I think fans of fiction, especially fans of crime fiction, often have these the protagonists become real people to them, and that's sometimes one of the problems when the character makes it on to the smaller, large screen. You know, that's not how I pictured Harry Bosch, or that's not how I pictured Walt Longmire. So it's very interesting. I think these characters do become real, but that's just me.
No, actually, I don't think that is you. I mean, I think most readers, to actually engage with a book, I think that the characters do have to feel real to you. And so, it's normal. It just sounds crazy. You know, it's like, this is a real person to me. And you're like, no, actually, it's a figment of your imagination. But still, the story is real to you as you're reading it.
Right. And I think the characters become
individuals, even if they only exist in your imagination. I've had writers tell me on the podcast before, oh, I wanted to have so-and-so do this, but she wouldn't. Perhaps readers don't understand that, but I think there's a certain truth in a character that a character can actually tell you what he or she would say or do.
You're absolutely right. That is exactly it. Because, you know what, people in life, there are certain things that people will or will not do. And so yeah, that's an interesting way of thinking about it, yeah.
Well, and so back to Nora, I thought as I read the book that loose ends and strays seem to define her life, herself and the child she put up for adoption, which is a key point in the story, and the dog she took in. And so it made me think, do you think this is one of the reasons she's so good at finding people? And we should tell the listeners that that's Nora's job. She's an investigator, no longer a blues singer, and she finds people for anybody who's looking.
The connection is that it, because she, this whole idea of loose ends and strays, and that's why she does that. She's so good at picking up trails.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was thinking because she's a little bit of a lost soul. I mean, that you know, she's not singing. She is doing her best. And this is a question further along the line. She's doing her best to have a minimal footprint in the world, which, of course, is getting more and more difficult the more and more we live in cyberspace. And I was wondering if because of who she is, what she's lost and what she's given up, that maybe that's one of the reasons she's good at finding things, because she's lost so much.
That's really interesting that you mentioned that, because I had not thought of it that way exactly. But see, this is really beautiful, because now you've given me something that I didn't understand about the character. And now that you're saying it, yeah, it does make sense. She is lost, and she does attract these strays, and it helps understand maybe why she is so good at finding people and finding the different paths to locating people and solving these mysteries. So you have given me something today. That's unusual.
As a fellow Canadian, I thought The Lost One shows another side, a less salubrious side of Canada in general and Vancouver in particular. And I thought that was very important to the story, especially for your readers south of the 49th parallel. So I was wondering if you wanted to talk about that. I read that you're originally from Toronto and you're now in Vancouver, and those are two of the Canada's biggest cities. And it's not, you know, the Vancouver that Nora Watts lives in is not the shiny, happy place that Americans think it is.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm an immigrant, and there's this idea of the Canadian dream that has passed through my life, and it's very immediate in the narrative that of Canada. It's the story of this, you know, it's a happy place for immigrants, and it's nicer than America, and it doesn't have these problems here. And that's actually not true. Canada is a very complicated country, we don't really look critically at it too much. And I think we're starting to more and more, especially as it's the 150th year of the country's origins, as we know it today, right? And we know now that it's people have been here for a lot longer than that, and there are certain truths to the history of the country that, you know, we haven't really taken a good hard look at. And it really fascinates me, this idea of Canada and the Canadian dream versus the reality of Canada and the Canadian dream, and how maybe it's not as accessible to everyone as we'd like to think it is, and maybe it's not as of a place as we like to think it is. And I think a lot of our history gets brushed under the rug in a way that it doesn't in America. So not that we are as contentious a place, and I'm really glad that by and large Canadians, it's not as violent perhaps as the state, but there's so much here that causes tension, and we don't understand it, and sometimes we try to look away, but for me personally, I think it's really important to take a good hard look at the places that we live in and the histories that we come from, and try to do better. And so the story is really not about like a social justice treatise that I'm trying to hit you over the head with or whatnot. I'm just trying to inject a little bit of the reality of what I see and incorporate that into the story, because that really tells of the place that you're writing about, and it really helps to set the place in a way that isn't washing over the reality.
For instance, I thought the contrast of how Nora had to carve out a place to live because Vancouver is so expensive versus the resort she goes to as she's looking into the story. And we should mention that the story deals with the family who adopted the daughter she put up for adoption. When she was 15, she had been raped, and it was a representation of a very painful time in her life. And that girl disappears, and the adoptive family calls on Nora, the birth mother, who happens to be someone who finds people, to try to find her. And in pursuit of this, she goes to this very, very fancy resort that is so fancy that the help, stays in rooms that are nicer than her apartment. So I thought that was a very interesting contrast of life in British Columbia, that it really is a sort of have and have not.
Absolutely. And it's almost impossible to be middle class here. And there are very few options. I think recently a single bedroom apartment in Vancouver has the average price to rent now is $2,000. Just a single bedroom, your basic apartment is $2,000 a month now, and that's who can afford that? That's crazy. Just for one bedroom, so people are really being squeezed out. The area is. The city is fabulously wealthy, but there's also a significant growing underclass here, and that's also something that I wanted to take a look at and disseminate for the purposes of this book.
And for the purposes of the book, the past never stays in the past, does it? Nora's done her best to compartmentalize her life and streamline her footprint, but as we mentioned, there's so much information on all of us, even someone as reclusive as Nora, that it's impossible. And it's the mining of that knowledge that puts Nora and the daughter she put up for adoption at risk, which is at the heart of the story.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we are our pasts. And I think it is possible to bury the past, but you actually have to deal with it in a constructive and healthy way to be able to move on, and Nora has not, and that's really what the story is. It's when her past comes back up, she has not dealt with it, and so this is the time now that she sees how not how messed up it is, but it's the time that she's now confronting it, because she had tried to bury it without actually looking at these issues and coming to terms with the fact that she is a mother. And that was one of the trickier aspects to write as well, is how does she reconcile that she is a mother with this with the terrible events that of her past. And your past can never really stay buried if there is a living, breathing sort of representation of your past out there in the world. So it is a tricky, complicated thing, but I thought it was really interesting, and it gave me the ability to perhaps explore my own feelings about motherhood and my own feelings about how the past can really circle around to you if you don't deal with your issues.
And of course, Nora, not of course, but Nora is also dealing with an on-again, off-again relationship with sobriety, is I think the best way I can put it. And that sort of colors, as you said, how she escapes her past or whether she decides to confront her past. And it's not, and it's a moving target.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I have people in my life who struggle with substance abuse, and it's really hard to be sympathetic because sometimes you want to look at them and shake them and say, "Stop! This is, you know." But it's deeper than that. Substance abuse issues and mental illness in general, it's deeper than just stopping with the alcohol or stopping with the drugs or whatever it is that you're abusing. It actually has to do with more complicated things. There are deeper roots than that, and to get to those roots, you have to clear away all the extra stuff that you've been trying to mask for so long. So, yeah, it's it sounds very depressing, but I promise it's there.
Oh, it's not depressing. It's not depressing. It's as a matter of fact, and I don't want to introduce a spoiler, but at the end of the book is extraordinarily uplifting. So there you go.
Okay, good. I'm glad that you found that, because it's sometimes when you, particularly with books that deal with these dark subject matters, yes, they are complex, and I think they do add something to the human condition. But you also have to think, well, why exactly would someone want to read this? Is there some sort of redeeming factor? So I'm glad you found one. That makes me happy to hear.
Well, you mentioned redeeming factors. I think, and I've listened to a lot of people talk about crime fiction and, noir. And I went to a panel once, and I really wish I could remember which author said this. But this man said, he goes, one of the things that we read noir, and your book is very much in the noir tradition, is all of these things happen, but the characters and maybe the reader are also looking for redemption. And I think that is, Nora might not know that that's what she's looking for, but it's certainly one of the things she finds.
Yes. Yeah, that's whoever that man was, he hit on something, because it is true. We are all, I think, in life looking for redemption in some sort of way. We're looking for that little bit of light that we can find in our lives. So yeah, absolutely. And Nora, really, she doesn't know what she wants. And I don't know a lot of people who actually do do in life. And that's another part of the human condition that we don't really talk about, is what do we want and how do we get there? It's interesting about this genre that you can find people like that who are so flawed, I guess.
Well, it's interesting, and we're talking about things that Nora's looking for and things that are going throughout the book, I want to talk a little bit about the music and one of the relationships. I mean, she has fraught relationships with everybody, but one of them is with her own musical gift, her voice, and I guess finding out that you're an actor makes a little bit of sense, because I think that all artists have a complicated relationship with their gift. I don't want to get into like writer's block and, you know, all this sort of stuff, but it is a complicated relationship, because it's something that you almost conceptualize as outside of yourself. There's sort of Nora and Nora's voice. And sometimes Nora doesn't see them as being one and the same. Am I reading too much into it, or is that accurate?
No. I think you're right. I mean, her voice is a talent that is outside of herself, and she didn't choose it. She just had it. There are some people, and I actually don't consider myself one of those people, but there are some people out there who have an artistic gift. And this gift is so strong within them that they they not only must they do it, but they are so good at it that you can never take it away from them. And they struggle with it as well, because it brings them great joy to actually, I guess, embrace this vocation, but also great heartache, because it's hard to be an artist, and it's hard it's a difficult path to follow. I actually don't think that I was that good of an actor, but I enjoyed it, and I do appreciate artists and these people who do have a calling, per se. And Nora is definitely one of them.
And I also love a detective with a dog. And and I mean, aside from, you know, that Whisper, her dog, is a stray that she brings in, I was wondering why there was something, was there something in particular that prompted you to give Nora a dog, or did Nora just find the dog and tell you, I have a dog now?
Yeah, that was, you know, nothing was planned. I didn't set out when I wrote this novel. I mean, I thinking back on it, I think it was crazy, just the lack of story outlining and things that I did. But Whisper just sort of came to me, and it seemed like if Nora was going to have a companion, this is her companion. It's not going to be a person, because she doesn't trust people. It's going to be an animal, because when the people who don't trust other people are those who give themselves freely to their dogs, to their cats, to their pets. So Nora is definitely one of those people who she will seem so abrasive to other human beings, but when it comes to an animal, that is her heart and soul, and that's what she puts her love into. So it just seemed like the right kind of fit for her.
And I also love a crime fiction novel with a playlist. And you join a very, very august group of crime fiction writers, and I include Don Winslow and Michael Connelly and Augustus Rose, who wrote The Ready Made Thief, in putting together a very good playlist. And for someone who says she didn't know a lot about the blues when she started, you've made up for lost time. I mean, you've got Nina Simone, Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood, which, you know, sort of I could hear that going through the novel. But Bessie Smith, I Need a Little Sugar in My Bowl, and Howlin' Wolf, Backdoor Man. I mean, that this is like Big Mama Thornton, Hound Dog. You've got some of the DNA of Delta Blues in there.
These people are so emotive. Those artists, you put on one of their records and you just get lost. And that is the appeal of the blues to me. Writing this book was it was an interesting experience, because on one hand, I'd moved to Vancouver with nothing, pretty much. And the rain really got to me, and it was a weird, out of body kind of dark experience in a way, the writing of it. But then when you put the music on top of it, though, like, there's such joy to lose yourself in those deep, raspy, growly kind of voices and that kind of musical sensibility. It really helped me set the tone for the book and for my writing. And so now, as I move forward, each Nora book that I do, I develop a playlist. So now I'm actually... Have you ever listened to Gary Clark Jr.? He's like a new blues artist, and he's got this beautiful falsetto, and he's a guitar whiz. And so for the next installment of Nora's story, I listened to him a lot, and I listened to a lot of different blues and soul artists. And I go to Detroit, so I listen to some Detroit kind of soul music as well, because place is really important, and music is such a big part of place. And so whatever helps me feel the place is something that I kind of lose myself in with the writing process. Maybe that's not like a clear way of explaining it. I don't know, but music is very important to writing Nora's story. And as I move forward, the music that I listen to inform her character changes, because hopefully she changes as well. And that's reflective. But it has been one of the greatest experiences of my life to discover new music because of a character that sort of just came to me. That it was so surprising, that experience, and I really value it. I take a lot away from it.
So as you just mentioned, this is the first of the series, and we'd like to know what is Nora's next case, or what's gonna take it. Is it actually gonna physically take her to Detroit?
Yes, yeah, that's what I'm working on right now. There definitely is a Canadian storyline, but there's also a little bit of a mystery in Detroit that I'm playing around with, and it's a very exciting city to me. I love Detroit, and I've been fascinated by it for a long time. So I thought, okay, let's do something a little different, and let's see what trouble Nora can get up to in this city, and how she's going to find her way out of the difficult situations that she does. Because in Vancouver, you know, she has a specific way of moving about because she knows the city so well. But I thought it would be really interesting to put her somewhere new and see how she figures it all out then.
Thank you so much, Sheena, for talking to us about The Lost Ones, and congratulations. It's a huge thing to get a novel published, and also a huge thing to have the ability to write a second one. I look forward to Nora's continued adventures. She really is unique.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And thank you for all the insights that you've given me today. It was such an enjoyable conversation.